Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Lau.
This week, we continue our review of 2019. So last week, Chris and I kind of went over some of the things that we enjoyed and some of the things that we did in 2019. So Lyle, what is kind of your biggest memory or your biggest highlight of the past year?
Well, I'm just a bit stunned you're not doing that like spiel at the beginning. I was like, oh, I wonder what it was going to be.
I'm going right into it.
I was just like, 2020 starting off different. Yeah. In general, you know, I guess role-playing wise, some highlights. Well, gaming wise, the two biggest highlights for me was the BattleTech Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
Which the Clan Invasion. So, you know, if you divide BattleTech fans in between Clan and Innisphere, I'm Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was pretty exciting, even though I won't receive it until later this year.
All right.
And for role-playing, right at the tail end of 2019, of all things, was what I would consider maybe the best product, the RPG product of... It came out end of 2018, so I'll say it's a 2019 product, and that's the Call of Cthulhu starter set.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah,
talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, we played Aliens, and that was also a nice surprise in that that seemed to capture the spirit of the movie Alien and mostly the movie Alien. Mm-hmm. And I guess in retrospect, I went back and watched Prometheus and Covenant, Alien Covenant. And then I go, oh, I see. Okay. I get why the synthetics are such a big deal in the role-playing game.
Yes. Right.
But yeah, so it really captured that spirit. But yeah, this Call of Cthulhu starter set really blew me away. It's really, really happy with that purchase, and it's the best starter set that I've ever, like, that functions as an introduction to the game. Mm-hmm. And really, I think it's like a blueprint for all starter sets going forward.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. That's some.
Yeah. And I looked at Essentials. I mean, we didn't play the Adventures in Essentials, and I do have the Dungeons and Dragons Essentials, and I do have the Dungeons and Dragons starter set, and yeah. Call of Cthulhu. It's written by Mike Mason and friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess he's done some stuff, so he's a bit of a name.
That should be something that people can look forward to in 2020. We're going to start reviewing starter sets, so I think that's a good starting place. Is the and it might be a kind of a high bar set by the Call of Cthulhu. So we'll take a look at some kind of newer and older starter sets, but just what everybody's tried to do to get you into their system.
Yeah, because you have several starter sets, and we had talked about, hey, this would be a good idea. I think you recommended it. Let's do some starter sets.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put our heads together, and we're like, oh, no, yeah, this could really be something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what should a starter set offer? And coming up with some criteria. And then I already had the Traveler starter set on its way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really good too. And people are going to wonder why I'm not praising that as a starter set, but you have to watch a review of that.
Yes, yes.
But I'm very happy with that product too. But is it a starter set?
Right.
So there's that teaser. And then I just thought, well, you know, the Call of Cthulhu's got a really reasonably priced starter set. It's $25.
Mm-hmm.
It's the recommended US dollars. And Amazon has it discounted by just a couple, but you still, that's really, like, that's competing with Wizards of the Coast, mm-hmm, in terms of price. And I thought, yeah, so I may as well get that popular YouTuber Seth Skrzydkowski recommended it. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll get that. And yeah, just great. It exceeded my expectations. Just to give a little teaser, I've been a really big proponent now of solitaire adventures.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, not necessarily like a one-on-one adventure, and just it has that. So you, I mean, people can imagine, like, a lot of times you buy a new game and then you just open it up or open the box or you open the book and then you read it and you're like really excited and schedules.
Yes.
You know, right. And you can't get the group together. And funny, I don't want to name names here. Let's just call them. I had plans to meet two people to play, play a War Room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Laramie and... Laramie and Driss canceled.
Right.
I mean, they had legitimate reasons, but so then I was like, what am I going to do? So I went and watched Rise of Skywalker, mm-hmm, and I brought the Call of Cthulhu starter set with me. And afterwards, I still had time, and I was like, you know, on my way home, you know, I swung by like a shopping mall and sat on one of their benches and just played the solitaire adventure.
Wow.
And it was nice. It was a little bit quiet. It was a weekday.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken the day off of work, especially to play with some people who canceled on me. But yeah, but no, it was really nice. And I actually, you know, you're like, hey, I'm now playing Call of Cthulhu. The solitaire adventure is designed to teach you how to play Call of Cthulhu. And I thought, yeah, this is really good. So we'll get into more detail about that. But that was a good, even though it was by myself, a major gaming highlight. I was really impressed with that product. I was like, I'll say the way forward, but obviously it's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if people are, you know, every industry is a copycat industry. And if you're going to copy, you might as well copy from the best.
Yeah.
And I would say that what it does, like, you know, you get games and I'm like, geez, I actually better jump on Amazon and write a review of this because really get the word out there. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. And it seems like a lot of systems are doing that because I was looking at the older starter sets and they always say at least three players. You know, the minimum is three players. But with the Dungeons & Dragons Essentials Kit, they had rules for the sidekick system. So they're saying it's two players. So just a DM and a player gives you enough to experience. So I think now with having solo adventures or solitary gameplay, they're kind of understanding that schedules and distances and internet connections, yeah, can cause that.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, gosh, I don't think I've ever asked you about your first time you role-played. But for me, of course, somebody else is teaching me how to play Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have another person teaching. So this box set is assuming that you're ground zero.
Right.
You're gamer zero for Call of Cthulhu in your community.
Mm-hmm.
So first teach yourself. And then the very first adventure that they have is for one to two players. So the keeper, the game master, and one player or two players. So you could like just, okay, you teach yourself, then you grab one other person for the first adventure for that, that's not a solitaire adventure. And then that person learns it. Now you got two people. And then the next adventure in the box set, it has multiple adventures, is for more players. So it's like growing the group.
Mm.
And that's, yeah, it's really good. Yeah, and I'm glad Essentials did that as well.
Yeah.
And I think Call of Cthulhu is a little bit more forgiving for a smaller group. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, when you read the H.P. Lovecraft stories, it's not like, you know, six people.
Right.
It's usually like the one person in the lonely house and meets like the other characters, the antagonists and that.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think that setting does lend itself more towards kind of solo insanity. Yeah, I think that works.
And so now I'm writing up a character for Mercenary Spies and Private Eyes. So Flying Buffalo,
mm-hmm.
So which probably more famous for Tunnels and Trolls.
Right.
So. But they've made a lot of solitaire adventures, and they still keeping that with their new releases. And Mercenary Spies and Private Eyes, it's a re-release of an old. There is some new material in it, but it is very much the game that came out in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and it has like the adventure of the Jade Jaguar is what I'm going to be playing.
Nice.
If you can't get the group together, then yeah, having these as a backup, it allows you to learn the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not fumbling.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we all experience that. You're being the game master because you bought the game, so you're introducing it to people. But it's actually the first time for you to play. And yeah, sure, your friends are going to be very forgiving. But you want to really sell the game. And I know there's games where I've run, and it's actually my first time playing the game. And then, you're walking away going, I did that game a bit of a disservice. You know,
right.
I wish I had somebody to have taught me, or I had a chance to run through that a few times, but you don't have that. I mean, you're the one you're gamer zero for that particular game. So yeah. So I'm a huge fan of solitaire adventures, and people who are unfamiliar with them, they're pretty much like a choose your own adventure novel deluxe. And actually there were some choose your own adventure novels that required you to roll dice and have like a mini character sheet.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So they're out there, but it's still, I mean, there were some tough choices in that Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, nice.
Like I knew, and it was like an H.P. Lovecraft thing, you know, I know, hey, I'm in this town, I'm screwed.
Right.
But yeah, but you're just, what do I do? I mean, there was a couple points in that adventure where I gotta really think this out.
That's great.
Like a really tense moment. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Nice.
Yeah, which would be the best choice. And I didn't cheat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I died. Wow. But, yeah. You know, I took them. I took those people. Yeah, I made them pay. I don't want to do this pointless, but I gave as good as I got, I guess. Nice. Yeah. But yeah, I want to play it again, even though I know how it ends. And I mean, you play it and I kind of figured out, oh, yeah, I kind of know what's going on here. But still, it didn't dampen my spirits or didn't take away from my enjoyment of the game. It was just like, can I escape this?
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was good. So,
excellent.
So your highlight would be?
Oh, boy. I mostly last week talked about the Alien RPG. So running that and trying to play with some props and atmosphere and sound effects. I think that was like the largest scale, you know, undertaking for running a game that I had done. So that was fun. That was fun to put together.
Well, I mean, I think that was a big success. I mean, it ran from start to finish. Yeah, like you said, you had some sound effects, which were different, so people could watch the actual plays and they can see what we're talking about. Yeah, it was a good game and it was run well. Yeah.
Yeah, and something that I caught at the end, just right at the end of 2019. So, and it was published in 2019. So I guess it counts as a highlight, but I haven't really experienced it yet. But there is another miniatures skirmish game published by Osprey we may want to take a look at in the coming year. So Ragnarok. Ragnarok published by Osprey, and the creator is Tim Kirklewski. He did what they call a heavy metal combat in Viking Age. And because of having played Blood Rage and having a lot of Viking and kind of Norse themed miniatures, I thought, wow, that might be a great thing to try. And the system itself is very interesting too. It's just a kind of simple D6 system, whereas Frostgrave was D20. So there was a lot of variation. So this has a simpler system that he made in the Morpheus engine. So he created the Morpheus engine for this setting, but it's actually a game system that uses a 2D6 to control combat and all of your checks and everything, all of your spells and everything. It looks really fun. It looks like a well-done system. And it's something that, because it's like Frostgrave, you know, we could use Lego minis, we could use just about anything to run it. I was excited to give that a try because it's more combat, less spell casting. And I think, you know, Frostgrave, because it's battling wizards, it lent itself to, you know, learning spells and being very caster focused. And this is going to be more brawling and kind of being blessed by the powers of the gods and enlightenment. There's a currency in the game that you accumulate that you use to pay for your powers that are given to you by the fallen gods. So basically this is post-apocalyptic Ragnarok. Like it's after Ragnarok has happened. So Asgard has fallen and the realms, Yggdrasil, the tree has collapsed and the realms are kind of crashing in on each other. So you have the different characters and different races from different settings intruding on each other. And so it's a nice mix of...
So like the elves?
Yeah.
And-
Yes, yeah, elves and, okay. and the giant, yep. yeah, and the giants
oh,
and everything,
great.
And it's cool. And the even the new book that just came out at the end of the year, like right before, I think it was like December 24th or something, right at the end of the year, even adds a kind of Native American themed faction to the setting. So more death magic and more from the mortal realms. It's more from like kind of Midgard, but it's another system that I think will. That powers the magic differently and gives your different options as far as more use of kind of death magic and blood magic.
Oh, I see.
So they're supporting it and doing some interesting stuff. So I really want to give this a try next year. That was a big excitement towards the end of the year that I came across and said, wow, that sounds perfect. And I've got enough miniatures to, you know, kind of cover anybody that wanted to play. So I thought it'd be fun to give it a shot.
Cool. Moving away from gaming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess there were some big things that were out there, like, of course, like Marvel finishing Marvel Cinematic Universe. But
yeah.
I guess more personally exciting for me is just Star Wars and that my son started to get interested. My oldest son started to get interested in Star Wars.
Nice.
Yeah, so we watched A New Hope. Yeah, I think what happened was I bought Starfighters and other vehicles for Star Wars. It's one of those DK books.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend it. I mean, it's well priced, and actually, you can get those DK books for really good prices. I got sales, so I ended up getting my son like the Visual Dictionary, which was a lot thicker than I thought, and the Ultimate Guide. I think I bought the Starfighters and other vehicles for myself. But my son seems to be calling dibs on stuff and claiming stuff, so he's like, "Oh, Well, so let's read this book. But it was nice because, you know, it's just something he's interested in. And when you're raising like a bilingual kid and you're surrounded by the other language, anything that's sparking a conversation, you're just going to grab onto. And it's, you know, comparing vehicles, and you're like, wow, you know, he's learning how to compare things and, you know, what's the best, what's the fastest, what's the biggest. And you're like, oh, great. Yeah, let's do that. And except he's like asking like, oh, why do the bad guys have so many more bigger ships? And the good guys have like small ships. And I'm like, you know, just better. The good guys have better pilots. They don't need the big ships or something. Yeah. You know, which is the fastest for the good guys? I'm like, the A-wing. No, is it not X-wing? No, it's the A-wing. And then he keeps asking the question. He keeps asking the question. It's not going to make the X-wing faster than the A-wing, buddy. So he got that. And he got really interested. And he was like, oh, you know, I want to watch the movie. So we watched A New Hope and he loved it. His favorite character was Luke Skywalker. But then he really liked the ships that like Anakin and Obi-Wan flew in the prequels. So he doesn't know who the Anakin is, Darth Vader, or becomes Darth Vader.
Right, right.
But he just knows that Anakin is Luke's father. And then he wanted to watch Luke's father, but as a boy. And so we watched The Phantom Menace. So he's got those two under his belt. So who knows whether we're going to go Empire Strikes Back or we're going to go Attack of the Clones next. But it'd be interesting to see. Because he might develop if he goes Attack of the Clones and then we switch to Empire Strikes Back, he might develop like an attachment to Anakin Skywalker as a character, not just a name.
Right.
You know, something that's never seen. Like for us, it was just, okay, Luke had a father who died. And it's like, oh, he didn't die. He's actually Darth Vader. So spoiler. My son, though, is like Anakin's like a real character.
Yes.
Like he has a face. He's a really good pilot and he's seen the ship that he flies. Or both of them. Oh, and that's one of the things. Yeah, I bought the, because I really like Anakin Skywalker, and I bought his Lego. I finally broke down and got like this Lego Jedi Starfighter when I went back to Canada. And I was like, ah, fine, I get it. But my son thought I got it for him.
Oh, nice. So I
put it together, and I'm like, oh, okay. So that also helped spark his interest in Star Wars. So
nice.
So he knows Anakin Skywalker. Like it's technically not his first Lego Star Wars Lego, but he thinks it is Anakin Skywalker and that. So I wonder if that big reveal will be more shocking for him.
Yeah.
So, like he knows this other character, Darth Vader, and it's like, what's going on here?
So, yeah, I'm really curious how younger generations are going to kind of process Star Wars, and especially as Disney keeps, well, depending on if they do, you know, elaborating on things. Because as we talked about a little bit before, it seems like some of the movies, they're really not very kid friendly. Like I wouldn't say Revenge of the Sith or even Last Jedi is very kid friendly. It's not very,
No, Last Jedi or Rogue One. And somebody, when I mentioned that on Facebook, somebody said, that's interesting. Maybe it would have been interesting maybe to start with Rogue One because it precedes A New Hope. And I'm like, that's a war movie. You know,
You have to play that
for a little kid. And they're like, oh yeah, good point. But you know, absolutely. Like, I'll say that, you know, Phantom Menace is very much a kid's thing and you're watching it and he's like, this is very, very cool. This is very, very cool. And you realize like, oh, it actually kind of starts pretty cool. I mean, ignore the crawl. He doesn't care why these guys are there. Oh, there's Anakin. There's Obi-Wan Kenobi. I think he knew his face. Oh, and the pumping gas. He's not going, oh, is that the best strategy to do a Jedi? You know, oh, is it pumping gas them enough? You know, he's not thinking that. He's just thinking like, if the door's open, it's all smoky or gassy, and then boom, you see the lightsabers and then they just start fighting and you're like, okay, it actually starts pretty action or pretty exciting. And he's like, this is very, really cool. This is really, really cool. And then it gets really slow for a while. But yeah, he kind of liked Jar Jar Binks a little bit. He wasn't laughing watching it, but he's like, oh, why is he so silly? And I'm like, I don't know. Because they thought it would appeal to you, I guess.
Yeah, right.
But it kind of really, I don't know, provides clarity on what's really appealing about Star Wars, and it's cool vehicles and likable characters.
Oh yeah.
And then people go, well, the prequels didn't have any likable characters. And you're like, yeah, okay, fine, fair enough. but the original trilogy, I mean, people say like Luke's whiny, but like for a young kid, Luke is like less whiny than they are.
Right.
So he's just wish fulfillment. Even like young Anakin Skywalker, or Annie, is just pure wish fulfillment for those guys, or for the kids.
Yeah.
And there's all these like cool things going around. So like maybe when the toys for the sequel trilogy, they just not moving, you know?
Yeah. And it seems like they're doing a lot more for older collectors, you know, the Black Series and the model kits and things. There was a lot more. Because Alan and I, after watching Rise of Skywalker, we went to that giant Edeon that's in Namba now, that like giant 8-story monstrous electronics store. And they have a toy section, and it was almost impossible to find Star Wars there. And
it's the same with the one in Umide, the Yodobashi Camera one, which has a full floor of toys.
Right.
And a tiny corner of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like the Kenner style figures.
Right.
The only one they had was Amelia Clark's character in Solo.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I really think...
You know, the person that everyone... You don't even know her name. Right. People.
Yeah, it seems like those 3¾ size Kenner figures have really fallen out of favor. I think for Rise of Skywalker, they only made 5. Like I saw one of them in the toy store, and on the back they showed the 5 others, you know, the 5 in the series. So I don't know if they're...
The Sith Stormtrooper was one of them, right?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like they're, you know, there's not going to be waves and waves of these figures being released like there used to be. And I think they just, they kind of missed it with merchandising to kids, and they're just going with adults and convenience stores, I guess, now.
It's
a shame. It's really weird. And thinking about what a huge crossover hit Star Wars was, and now how divisive it is now, is very bizarre.
It's really, really sad. I mean, we're going to do a proper episode on The Rise of Skywalker. But mm-hmm. It is like just people—they're counting how much time Rose Tico is on the screen.
Right.
And it's so meta now because people are going, "Well, that's a shame that she's not in Rise of Skywalker so much because of all the trolls and the harassment that she would receive." And you're like, "Yeah, that's terrible. You're not making a compelling case. That's terrible." That like Kelly Marie Tran, I think that's her name. Mm-hmm. You know, had a pretty terrible experience. That's right, but. Why should Rose Tico have more time? Like, what was interesting about that character? Like, I'm sure maybe some people are saying why they really like Rose Tico, the character. Mm-hmm. But you're not seeing that when people are complaining. They're just like, oh, now they're just responding to the trolls. And that's terrible. She should have had more time. And but tell me why.
Mm-hmm.
What could they have done? You know, and there could have been good things. I mean, you could tell me about the amazing chemistry that the actress has with John Boyega, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. Like, or how Rose and Finn are just like, wow, that's, you know, they don't have to be lovers, but they're really good together on the screen, you know?
Right.
The one thing I liked about Rise of Skywalker is that you got Poe, Rey, and Finn back together.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I don't know if it reminded me or just like after 3 movies, it's even better. But I mean, those 3 have like a really good chemistry together.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not to say that Kelly Marie Tran doesn't have a good chemistry with them, but you don't know because she was only with Finn, right? But it's not about what was in the movie. It was what surrounded the movie.
Yes.
And it's kind of like even people who liked Last Jedi are attacking Rise of Skywalker because it's not Last Jedi. And people who hated Last Jedi are attacking Rise of Skywalker because they just want Disney to fail.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thinking as like a father of a kid who's getting into Star Wars, and I was like, I don't want $80 figures to buy my kid because they're only for collectors now. I want Star Wars to succeed so they can flood the toy stores with Star Wars merchandise, and that means there's going to be cheaper merchandise options, you know, like cheaper toy options.
No, that's
so
true.
You know, I'm being very selfish here, but yeah, I just...
It does seem like, at least merchandising-wise, they've given up on the younger generation. But the one odd thing that I learned after I saw the movie that I thought was very strange and obviously an attempt to kind of pander to a younger audience is, so the crawl for Rise of Skywalker says, the dead speak, and Palpatine like broadcasts this message to the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And we don't hear that message. We don't know what the content of that is, but it's announcing, you know, it's announcing the rise of the Final Order. But that the actor recorded an actual voice message that was that message from the film that was broadcast. And the place that they debuted it was as an event in Fortnite. So if you play Fortnite, the Battle Royale PC game, mm-hmm. You could actually hear, because I think they did some character skins, like you could play as Rey or you could look like some of the characters in the game. And that's where they gave you the actual message that was broadcast.
It's funny you should mention that. Because a friend of mine just mentioned today that he went and took his daughter to see Star Wars, and that's why she wanted to see Star Wars because she's a fan of Fortnite. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's interesting. Works. Yeah, I mean, however, bring the kids in however.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, I guess Baby Yoda is.
Yeah, yeah,
kind of for the kids. I don't
almost,
know.
That almost caught my daughter. She's pretty against because she doesn't consider Princess Leia a real princess because she fires a gun. So like, yeah, she's not a real princess.
Oh, okay.
Those are her rules. But yes,
she's a general.
Yeah, right. But I haven't been able to bring her in on Star Wars. But yeah, Baby Yoda almost got her. But yeah, not quite.
You know what I find funny about The Mandalorian? I guess we could talk about The Mandalorian in more detail. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like The Mandalorian. Is it a highlight of the year for me? I don't know, you know, because not hooked on it. But it's funny because people complain, hey, I'm tired of Hollywood always following these formulas or doing these reboots and these remakes, mm-hmm. right? And then their solution to Star Wars, hey, do what The Mandalorian does. No, well, follow its formula. And I'm like, really? You want to just, people just overreact to things. But you're like, okay, that's, The Mandalorian is like, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, that's a good way to tell a Star Wars story. But do you want that to be the blueprint going forward? Yeah. It's just like, you're just going to get more of the same. You're going to get, okay, let's take another character or two characters. Keep it small scale. And you're like, no, you want small scale stories, but you want big epics too, you know? We're going to have a trilogy of The Mandalorian? Like,
yeah, right.
Like maybe Yoda grows up for over three movies. He's like, all right, well, see you now.
Yeah.
Maybe Yoda goes to high school or something.
I would agree with you. The same opinion that, yeah, Mandalorian really wasn't a highlight. But I guess it shows that they can do something else. They can do something else other than trilogies. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's good.
The movie I think that really suffered from The Last Jedi was Solo.
Oh, yeah.
And I know they had some production problems as well. But it's actually a good movie. Mm-hmm. And of all the movies, I mean, I might prefer Rogue One more of the Disney Star Wars. But Solo really showed how they can do something different from the main story. Even though it was Han Solo, but it was telling a different kind of story. Mm-hmm. It wasn't epic. It was very small scale. And you're like, wow, okay. And then The Mandalorian kind of does that as well. And then everybody's like, oh, I love The Mandalorian. But that's just because people are punishing Solo so much for The Last Jedi. But I think the way forward for Star Wars is not to follow a blueprint.
Yeah.
You know, and say what you will about Rian Johnson. I mean, if they had given him his own trilogy, in which they might, and say, hey, do your thing, and he goes and does his own thing with his own characters and his own style, people probably, like, it might have been less divisive, and people just, like, embrace that for what it is, because he makes good movies.
Right, right.
Like, Knives Out is getting rave reviews. Brick was good, you know. So,
yeah, no, I think Looper, too. Yeah, he did Looper with...
It's Looper, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, He's a very capable director, but you insert somebody with a very different style in the middle of a trilogy. I mean, he clearly wanted to do his own thing.
Yes, yeah.
And put his mark on it, and people are like, well, hey, there was already a mark there. And you're kind of like, you know, so it's just kind of maybe, you know, treat it like the way people treat Batman movies or whatever. Right. And it's just like, hey, Kate, here's your trilogy. Do whatever you want with Batman. Mm-hmm.
No, that's true. Yeah, I think once enough directors have had their shot at Star Wars and we see some different, you know, like comparing, you know, like the difference between Rogue One and Solo, those are very different movies in tone. And, you know, even though they both had, you know, kind of war themes and things, like Solo was enlisted, they had a very different feel to them. And so to get it away from like what the original trilogy or what any director had really done. So you're not comparing like, oh, George Lucas wouldn't have done that, or this isn't Star Wars. So that it broadens more like a Marvel Universe movie or something, so that you can, oh yeah, this is colorful and funny, and this is more serious, and it's more, they're more espionage, or you have more flavors. And I think Star Wars doesn't really have that right now. So that's that's a big weakness. And I think the weird thing about doing that movie right in the middle of the trilogy and giving it to Rian Johnson is it was different, and we hadn't quite finished with our little nostalgia thing yet. We weren't, you know, they didn't quite put the old fans to bed yet when they did that. And, you know, he was starting to have pretty heavy themes and things in the movie that were very anti kind of good guys versus bad guys. You know, he was starting to blur things and coming up with kind of theming in a movie that didn't fit Star Wars. It could fit his Star Wars movie, but it didn't fit, like, you know, what people expected for Star Wars. Thus, our expectations were subverted.
Yeah, I was a little heavy on that. I don't recall him being so, putting his thumb that heavily on the subversion scale.
Right.
In his other movies. But yeah, but I guess if you're doing something that relies so heavily on tropes, then yeah, you might think, hey, I want to do something different. Mm-hmm. So, and one of those differences is going to be to just throw away all those tropes.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true.
And you're like, oh, okay, less is more, but sure. Yeah. So looking forward to 2020, any?
Yeah, there's a couple of big Kickstarters I'm looking forward to. We've got Siege of the Citadel coming, hopefully. So there's a lot of opportunity to get back into the Mutant Chronicles universe, crack open the 2D20 RPG, because we're going to have a lot of minis and a lot of tile sets and everything to play in that universe.
No, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's funny with the Siege of the Citadel, and I don't know if they're the first Kickstarter to do this, but because there was so much stuff there, I think, I mean, the companies are learning from each other, and people keep getting burned by shipping, and people keep, took them a while to figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? Evil Hat Productions said they had to take out a loan before, or they would have gone
under. Right, right.
And it was all related to shipping. But so they broke it up, and it's like, you could pay more shipping and you get stuff right away, mm-hmm. that's ready. And then there'll be another wave, which will be separate shipping.
Right.
Or you can pay one shipping, which would be cheaper, and you got to wait until the second wave. And that's what you and yes. I opted to right, do. Right. So actually, a lot of people do have the first wave of Sieges.
Yeah, that's true.
And Clan Invasion. So Catalyst did it for the Battletech mm-hmm. thing. And so I'm going to get my stuff a little bit later, but pay a little bit less in shipping.
Nice.
So.
And also the Trudvang Chronicles. Yeah, I think it's called Trudvang Chronicles. The board game version that Kamon has made, working with Riot Minds in that universe. So that's going to be more Norse mythology, more setting, you know, more monsters and more characters for that setting. So looking forward to that. And I think that might be because that system might be a little hard to introduce. I think there is a starting adventure, but it's a little heavy to introduce. And so having miniatures and maps and things on the table might make it a little bit easier. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And that's all based on, you know, the wonderful art from the Trudvang setting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, having something to draw from definitely makes a game easier to get. Like if something, you know, like a Star Wars role-playing game, you're like, hey, do you want to play Star Wars?
Right.
Like people get it because of the movies, right? And then like people knock, you know, the way like Dungeons and Dragons is maybe like focused very Tolkien-esque or mm-hmm. like that style, but that's easy for people to get because they kind of know right. what Lord of the Rings is. So like, oh, okay, we're kind of like in a quest, we're like adventurers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's something like that. Yeah. Okay. I get it. Mm-hmm. Whereas you go a little bit more out there or a little less Eurocentric, we'll say. People don't have the media to grab onto to get the game. So yeah, so if a board game introduces somebody to like the concept, and then you can get in a little bit deeper in a role playing game, that's great. Yeah.
The big thing that I heard in 2020 about Games Workshop is that they're expanding now. So they're being more a little bit more distinctive about their departments, and they're having like there's a 40K. 40K department, and there'll be like a Horus Heresy department, and they're breaking up the design responsibilities and, you know, the writing and everything between distinct groups so that they can have kind of equal support for all of these different properties that they've developed. So the box games are getting their own focus in that way. So so everything's going to see good support.
Oh, neat.
In the next year, and just depends on, you know, what makes them money. But yeah, so I'm interested to see how much that evens things out, and we see regular releases for, you know, some of our favorite boxed games from them.
Oh, cool. I have got Torg Isle. Actually, Isle should be arriving now.
Excellent.
Oh, and that's great. Cyberpapacy coming.
So we'll have some more unboxings to do for those. All right. So what are you looking forward to the most in 2020?
Probably just playing games that I already have. So, like Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, right.
I actually had picked up the 7th edition before getting the starter set, so looking forward to mm-hmm. playing, like starting with the starter set and then moving on to the regular thing. I picked up the Traveler starter set, which is really good. So looking forward to trying Traveler, and it comes with its mm-hmm. It's like a introductory adventure as well.
Nice.
Of course, Mercenary Spies and Private Eyes, playing that. Yeah, I also. Yeah, I got Aeon Trinity. So, yeah, so many games. Yeah, I mean, we have so many games, like it's hard to even like go back to playing another game that we've already tried, you know?
I know. Yeah, I think that happened to us with Forbidden Lands. We had that one intro session, and then we just never got back to it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, so we enjoyed it, but then it was like, okay, we want to try this other game.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really different from a lot of people's experiences, because a lot of people play, one game.
Right.
And then you see on Twitter, like, people are like, why aren't they trying other games? And it's just like such a, it's not alien. I mean, I understand people that would only play like one role-playing game and like a long, you know, 5-year campaign instead. But it's just like such a different, it's so different from my own experience that it's just like, wow.
Yeah,
there's a lot of games out there. Yeah. It's like hard to find the time to play anything. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So as you heard, so we've got some plans for episodes as well. So we'll be doing a starter set series. Of course, we'll be throwing our drop into the big ocean of Rise of Skywalker reactions.
Right.
Yeah. Give our own unique take on that.
Yeah.
We also talked about doing one on The Mandalorian, but we'll see maybe we'll combine them.
Yeah, that might come up. Yeah, that's true. That might come up when we're talking about the kind of the future and what Star Wars is actually capable of anymore. Forward to that, we just got to add, especially those two guys that flaked out on you for the War Room. Those guys are off the podcast as far as I'm concerned. I never want to hear from them again. We're talking about role-playing systems, and we haven't even like brought up like board games. We're so backlogged on board games, it's not even...
Oh, yeah, War Room is going to be... Funny. Yeah, we're really looking forward to that, and it's coming. The unboxing has been released.
Yes, yeah,
the unboxing. Oh, yeah, you can see the unboxing of War Room, but unfortunately, we can't give a review just yet.
Yeah, hopefully coming soon in the new year, we'll have a chance to sit down with some like-minded players and get through a game of that. Yeah, but it's one of those things that's going to require a day. We're gonna have to set aside a day for it. So yeah. So that's basically what we enjoyed and what we were looking forward to in 2019 and then coming up in 2020. So thank you for joining us. If you want to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, it's idleredhands.com, on Twitter at Idle Red Hands, and of course, both Twitch and YouTube. There's a YouTube channel with videos and Twitch for the live streams. And if you would like to support the podcast, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. We will be back again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.